say the Shishu of one parsha and the Shishu of the next week's parsha. So that's very much the case in terms of Ayako Fukude. So especially since we'll get to do them back to back, you'll see that there is quite a lot of overlap, quite a lot of synergy and symmetry, both talking about the menorah and the mizbeach and the like, essentially a lot of connection and overlap between the two. So we're not going to add so much. We'll go through the psukim together, just make a few quick haros and note a little bit, really talk about the two together, the two shishis. I guess that makes a 12th-y. And then we have to talk a little bit about HaChodesh. HaChodesh also has some important synergy, so we'll try to address all those issues and see what we can accomplish. But within the psukim, there isn't necessarily a whole lot to say, especially, for example, if we talk about Vayakel's Shishi. I think that this is one of, in terms of just looking at the standard commentaries, this is one of the least commented on aliyahs that you find anywhere. There's very little in the Mefarshim on Chumash about this. Many of the Mefarshim that have a lot to say about other things have almost nothing at all to say about this aliyah, including even Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, who often has been the go-to commentary when no one else says something on these parts of these sections of the second half of Shmos and Vayikra. Doesn't have really anything to say on this aliyah, but there's a few nakudas that we will call attention to, and then we'll just look at the Shishi of Pekude, which has all these overlapping themes. So the beginning of Shishi of Vayakel, which is Parag Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, so the Torah tells us, Vayasa sa menorah, Zav Torah, Miksha Ata Asa sa menorah, Yerecha v'kanog, V'ya, Kaftarel, Fracha, Mimena Hayu. So he made the menorah out of pure gold. It was one piece, Miksha Asa sa menorah, Yerecha v'kana, and with, together with its shaft and its branch, V'yah, Kaftareh, the bowls and the bulbs, Prachah, and the flowers that go inside of them, Mimenahoyu, that was all of the same. Chazal tell us in a few places that the menorah was one of the items that Moshe had on time, that there were certain things that Moshe needed some extra instruction, some extra guidance, and the menorah is one of them. And the Gaon in his commentaries to Chumash suggests that it has to do with the complicated symbolism that the menorah had and all of the Kabbalistic imagery, and that was where Moshe needed a little extra guidance. So the pasuk continues, V'shisha kanim yotzim mitzidah, shlosha kanei menorah mitzidah ha'chad, v'shlosha kanei menorah mitzidah ha'sheni. So you have six branches from its sides, three on one side, three on the other side, shlosha givyeh mishukadim bakana ha'echad, three bowls in the shapes of almonds that are on one branch, kafter v'ferach, like a bulb inside, like a bulb and a flower. V'shlosha givyeh mishukadim bekana echad kafter v'ferach, and so to on the other side. Kein l'sheshes hakadim hayotzim in ha-menorah. That's the story for these six that emanate from the menorah. Uva menorah arbe givyeh mishukadim kafterel v'ferachah, and in the menorah itself, you have these four bowls made out of the shapes of almonds. V'chavtor tachas shnei hakanim mimena, v'chavtor tachas shnei hakanim mimena, v'chavtor tachas shnei hakanim mimena, l'sheishas hakanim ayotz mimena. So you have that pattern going for the six branches. Kaftareyem uknosam mimena hayu, kula miksha achas zavtar. So you have all of these branches and bulbs, they're all the same. It was all one act of work of pure gold. He made the lamps and the tongs and the trays, all of gold, pure gold. Kikar zav tar also saw the ace called Kela. It was made out of a kikar zahav. So here there is a comment in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi in the Masechet Shkalim in Parak Vav, Achigimel, has a comment here that Shlomo HaMelech, when he made the menorah for his Beis HaMikdash, so he took 1,000 kicker of gold and threw that all into the furnace to melt it down and then to combine it into one. And that's how he came up with then one kicker of pure gold. which is quite an image, essentially a 1,000-to-1 ratio. Rav Nosson Gestetner, in his commentaries on Chumash, has a number of comments about this point, about the symbolism of 1,000, and he notes that this is an idea that we find throughout Chazal, that to be worthy of horah, of public instruction, like the menorah represents the Torah, there seems to be this constant ratio of 1,000-to-1. The Gemara says that elef nichnas lepos beis hamedrash ve'echad yotzei l'harah, that you have 1,000 who enter the study hall, and only one comes out ready to be mor harah. There seems to be this constant notion of 1 out of 1,000. You need 1,000 degrees of effort to have 1 degree of success in the area of harah. So that's perhaps the imagery here. But in any event, it raises the question of when the reference here is to a kicker of gold, so is that an exact shear, or is that just a minimum? It has to be at least that much, or does it have to be exactly that much? So it sounds like from Rashi earlier, in Perech Chafei and Pasuk Lamites, that the weight had to be exactly that. And perhaps that's also what it sounds like from this story about Shlomo HaMelech, that here Shlomo HaMelech had clearly so much more gold, but he used it all towards just distilling this 1/1,000th of that, this smaller amount of gold. Maybe the idea is that it's not just a minimal shear, it's an exact shear. It has to be that, no more and no less. So that could be the case. Mecheskinuch has a discussion about this. He notes that it sounds like this from both these sources, that it had to be exact, but really more from Rashi, because Shlomo HaMelech maybe just wanted his menorah to be like Moshe Rabbeinu's. But the Rashi makes it more conclusive that apparently it was an exact shear. Okay? So the pasuk continues, Loyah says, Mizbach HaKetores, Atze Shittim. So they made the Mizbach HaKetores out of Shittim wood. Amma Arko, Amar Achbo, Ravuab, Masayim Komotsu, Menu Hayu Karnosav. So it was an amma in length and an amma in breadth. And it was a square. It was 2 amas high, and the horns were also like that. Veitzafos ozov tar es gago v'es kirosav saviv v'es karnosav v'yas lo zer sohav saviv. And he covered it with gold on the top and on the sides and also on the horns. And he made a rim around it also of gold. V'shtei tavos sohav also lo. And he made 2 rings of gold by the 2 corners on the 2 sides to be there for the badim to carry it with. And the batim were made out of shittim wood, and they covered that with gold. So he made the shemen hamishcha that was Kodesh, and the Ketores HaSamim that was Tahar, based on the, according to the work of the Rekeach of the perfume maker. So here there's a very interesting discussion, and this really is going to cover both of our Shishis. This will cover Shishi of Vayakel and Pekudei in their common element, but there's a very beautiful discussion about this in the Sefer Shari Orah. Shari Orah, if you're familiar, is work that appears in a number of different volumes. Was the Sichos of Reb Meir Tzvi Bergman, who is Rosh Hashiva of the Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, but his father-in-law was the Rosh Hashiva of an even more well-known Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. His father-in-law was Rosh Shach, often known by that relationship, but he has very beautiful Sfarim in his own right. And recently they came out with a new edition of some of his Mamarim. He has some very beautiful things there. So he has a discussion about this pasuk. So what is noteworthy about this pasuk? So we see that the Shemen HaMishcha is identified how? As Kodesh. And the Ketores is identified how? As Tar. So what's the difference? Is there a reason one is Kodesh and one is Tar? There's an interesting discussion if you look in the Paris Yosef. You see, he talks about this. He has a whole technical explanation. Meshachachma talks about this. But what the Rav Bergman wants to say is very interesting. First, he offers a suggestion that maybe the Shemen Hamishcha is called Kodesh because it makes other things Kodesh. So maybe that's why we use that name for it. But he says it's not a satisfactory explanation. And rather, he offers the following. It's a very elaborate, this is about a 10-page shtickle, but I'll just distill the essence of it, which is really very, very interesting. He notes that there is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid about more. We always want more. So more is an ingredient in the Ketores HaSamen. So what is more? I want to know. I'm not allowed to put this together, but let's say you theoretically wanted to. So you wanted more. So how do you get more? All right, where do you find more? What is more? Anyone know what more is? So the Rambam in Hilchos Kli HaMikdash, the Rambam writes that it comes from the blood of a certain wild animal. And the Ravid says, what are you talking about? What kind of place does that have in the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan? So rather, says the Ravid, he thinks it's a type of grass. It's a plant. See, Avnei Nezer, and his Chuvus, so he has some kashas on this explanation. And he notes that if you look in the Rambam's writings, so more is sometimes spelled without a vav, and sometimes more is spelled with a more, it's spelled with a vav. So he suggests that there's two different types, two different substances called more, more with a vav and without a vav. So more without a vav, that is from blood, and that was used in the Shemen HaMishra. While more without a vav, that was made from plants, and that was used in the Ketores. Okay? So, more, two different mores in the Shemen HaMishcha and in the Ketores. The one that comes from blood is in the Shemen HaMishcha. The one that comes from plants is in the Ketores. So, you suggest that that could explain the different languages here. That the Shemen HaMishcha is Kodesh, but it's not Tar. Because to be Tar, you have to be free of any kind of blood. And this is an idea the Chizkuni expresses in Parshas Kisisa, in Perek Lamed Beis, where the Torah refers to as HaMenorah HaTahor. And if the menorah was tar, so the Chizkuni says, why Shalohayu Alayim Shum Min Eidomen? That unlike the Mizbeach, where blood is sprinkled, and other elements of the Mishkan, the menorah is free of blood, so you can talk about Tahara there. So he discusses what's the point of such tara and what's the point of such a distinction. So he notes that, as we know from many places, the menorah symbolizes Torah, and the menorah is called an edus. The pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, the Gemara says in Menachos that edus he lechol olam shashchina shara biYisrael, that the menorah serves as testimony to the world that God's presence is there. So he suggests that there is a necessary aspect there that there is no presence of blood. That we know that there is a major distinction that's drawn between David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. That even though David was a tzaddik, so David was not able to build the Beis HaMikdash. And Shlomo was the one who built the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the difference? The difference is that David HaMelech was involved in war. He had blood on his hands. Now, even if that blood is justified, still, as much as it's not held against him, that's something which is an inconsistent message for creating the Beis HaMikdash. And so too, when it comes to the menorah is the source of Torah, is the symbol of Torah, rather. So, therefore, what's the message here? So he says something fascinating, that Torah cannot be al menas v'kanter, that one cannot learn Torah with a military attitude, so to speak, that the Torah is going to be a weapon. Now, he doesn't identify there what he's referring to, but I assume he's talking about a tosus that appears in two places, at least, in Brachos and Daf Yudayin, Tainus and Daf Zayin, where there, Tosfos asks that there's a stira in Gemaras. That in some places, the Gemara says that Torah that's learned Shalol L'shma, that is a terrible thing. That's a bad thing. But in other places, we're told that Torah Shelo Lishma is not the greatest, but it's acceptable as a bridge. Because the Gemara says, La'olam yasok adam b'Torah mitzvahs afilu Shelo Lishma, shemitoch Shelo Lishma bo Lishma. That it's kedai, it's worthwhile to involve yourself in Torah and mitzvahs, even if your motives are not Lishma, because ultimately it will be Lishma. So Tosus asks, so which is it? Is Lishma terrible and unacceptable? Or is it okay? And some point out that maybe it's more than okay, even just as a bridge, but the language of the Gemara is La'olam. It's always necessary to have a little bit of that. So which is it? So Tosus says there's two types. That the type of Shelo Lishma, that a person wants a shtickle kapah, person wants to be called Rabbi, a person wants some kind of nice honor, okay, that's not really what it's about, but we can live with that. We can live with that being the element that's mixed in. But a manas lekanter, if your whole point is you want to knock other people down, that your motive in learning is to be a weapon against other people, so then we're not interested in you at all. Then don't even come to our base measures. That's not the type of lishma that is acceptable even as a bridge. So here he suggests that that's the message, that the menorah that represents Torah, so the menorah is called Tar, and Tar means doesn't have any blood on it, because it has to be naki of any element of militarism, any aspect of being a weapon. That's a crucial message for the menorah. So I think that's already a very interesting idea. But then he has to bring it back to this pasuk, right? So in our pasuk, we're not talking about the menorah. In our aliyah, we're talking about the menorah. And in Pude, you'll see, we're talking about the menorah. But here in this pasuk, so we're talking about the Shemana Mishnah and about the Ketores. So why is the Ketores emphasized there as Tar? So here he has a really very beautiful application that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Zvachim and also Maseches Erchin, that Ketores is one of the aspects that is mechaper for Lashon Hara. The Gemara says a few things that are mechaper for Lashon Hara. So first the Gemara talks about how Saras is mechaper for Lashon Hara, and different elements of the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, are also mechaper. So the Gemara distinguishes that Saras is necessary for Lashon Hara that did damage, and the elements of the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, are machaper for Lashon Hara that didn't do damage. So that itself is a very worthwhile and important distinction, because it points to different madregas within Lashon Hara, and the fact that Lashon Hara is really both a ben adam l'chavero, and perhaps ben adam l'atzmo, or ben adam l'mokom. And that is one level where you actually hurt people, and that needs a kapara, and there's another level where maybe you didn't hurt people, but there's still an avera that needs to be rectified. So it's one of the, that Gemara by itself is perhaps one of the most useful sources to illustrate the distinction in Lashon Hara between the damage and the midos. The fact that the Gemara is highlighting a need for a kapara when it hurts people, a need for a kapara even when it doesn't hurt people. But then, even within the Mishkan, so the Gemara also distinguishes. And it says that the me'il, that the coat of the Kohen, so that was mechaper, and the ketores was also mechaper. So why do you need two for that? So the Gemara says that the me'il was mechaper for public, loud Lashon Hara. So it has a bell that makes noise, so Yavi Davar Shibakal, so something which makes a sound will come and be mechaper for something that makes a sound. While Lashon Hara Shibachashai, Lashon Hara that's in private, that's what the Ketores is mechaper for. So he asks Rabbi Bergman, that what kind of a distinction is that? Is it all Lashon Hara Bakal? Isn't that what it means? And Lashon Hara is talking. So why are we distinguishing between, oh, one that's bekal, that's in public, and one that's not bekal? They're all bekal. So what's the distinction? So he suggests, very interestingly, that when we talk about Lashon Hara Shibachashai, we don't mean speech, but we refer instead to Sinas Chinam. Now, the relationship between the two is something which is established in other sources. For example, the Chafetz Chaim talks about this in his Hakdama, and it's also quoted there in the Shari Orah, that the Chafetz Chaim explains at length in his Hakdama that when Chazal say that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, that's a reference to Lashon Hara, or something that is very strongly connected to it. And you find in other halachic sources that there is a link between the two. So the Kajigal of Rav mentioned the other day, for example, he has a tshuva where he understands that Lashon Hara is essentially a siag against sinah, that we're afraid that if you speak badly about people, you will come to hate them, or you will come to get other people to hate them. So therefore, we're prohibited from engaging in such conversation. So this idea that this reference, Lashon Hara Shebechashoy, is actually a code for Sinas Chinam is very, very interesting. And it reflects the fact that just like there's an important distinction within Lashon Hara that we mentioned a minute ago, the Lashon Hara that hurts people and the Lashon Hara that affects your midos, so too there's another distinction here as well, that there is the speaking of Lashon Hara, but there is also the mindset of Lashon Hara. And I think we've discussed in the past, and this is a point that doesn't get enough attention in general, that it could be that the mindset of Lashon Hara is as much the Aveira as the speaking. That we have a prohibition in the Torah of accepting Lashon Hara, of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. It's derived from a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Lo Sisa Shem Lashav. And there, the question could be asked, well, I understand, okay, so Lashon Hara, it's bad to speak Lashon Hara, and it's probably bad to participate, because if there's no audience, then the people won't speak. So why should it be necessary to tell us that? That's already interesting. So the fact that we have an extra pasuk telling us that there's an iser to participate in Lashon Hara as the recipient, that's already perhaps surprising. And what's more surprising is that according to one opinion in the Gemara and Pesachim, that's actually the Iker Isser. The Isser of speaking Lashon Hara is also derived from that pasuk. So that gives us a fascinating focus, that you might think that the real Avarian is the speaker of Lashon Hara, and the listener is the facilitator. But maybe it's the other way around. That maybe the real Avera is the mindset of being the Kabbal Lashon Hara. And the speaker is the accessory, is the facilitator. He's the one making it possible for the listener to do the real aveira of having the mindset of a negative judgment towards his friend, which is a very, very fascinating concept that deserves a lot of careful thought. So essentially, this suggestion that the sinas chinam is lashon hara shebechashoy, which the way he suggests it here is really even more than what the Chafetz Chaim says in his Hakdama, that the real yisod of the Isser is how you are viewing other people. That's a very fascinating idea. And perhaps that's what's going on here also. So the Ketores has to be free of all doubt. The Ketores has to be something which doesn't have any weaponry associated with it. Any of the blood of your friend shouldn't be involved, because the whole point is this is to be mechaper for that type of thinking about people. So this has to be noki, this has to be tar. It's a very beautiful idea. Again, he says even more. He has more applications and more explanations. Really, it's about a 10-page essay in that sefer, but a very beautiful sefer, very beautiful piece, a very kedai reading. So just we'll look quickly at Shishi Pekude. Again, you'll see it's the same theme. Just look at it quickly. So the Pasuk Kizayin begins, Vayihi b'chodesh harishon b'shan ha'sheni tzvach l'chodesh shukam ha'mishkan. So it was on the first day of the first month, the Mishkan was set up. Vayakam Moshe as Hamishkan, vayiten as Adonav, vayasim as Krasha, vayiten as Bricha, vayakam as Ambudav. So Moshe set up the Mishkan, and he established its sockets and the boards and the bars and the pillars. Vayifrosh as Ohel Hamishkan, vayasim as Michse Ohel Olav Lamala, Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, and he put the tent over it, and he put the covering of the tent over it as he was commanded. Vayikach vayiten as Eidos. El ha'aron v'yasim asabatim al ha'aron v'yiter es ha'kaparas al ha'aron melamala. So he put the edus into the aron, and he put the poles, the badim, into the aron, and he put the kaparas on top of it. ויהיה אהרן אל המשכן ויעשה את פרוכת המסך ויעשה על אהרן העדות כאשר הציב השם את משה. And he brought all this into the Mishkan, he put the parochas on top of it, and covered it up, as he was commanded, Vayitein es ha-shulchan v'ol moed, al yerach ha-mishkan tzafona, mechutz ha-parochas, and he put the table into the ol moed, facing the north, outside the parochas, v'yarach alav erach lechem lefnei Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, he set up the bread like he was commanded, v'yasem es ha-menorah v'ol moed, nochach ha-shulchan, al yerach ha-mishkan negba, and he put the menorah, the ohel moed, opposite the shulchan on the south side, v'yal ha-neros lefnei Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, and he lit the candles as commanded, v'yasem es mizbach hazav, v'ol moed lefnei ha-parochas, he put the mizbach hazav over there, in front of the parochas, v'yakter olav, kitorah salvim, kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. So you see, there really is a lot of symmetry and synergy between both of the two shishis. Now we end off on the Ketores, just like we ended off on the Ketores of that previous Aliyah, and also talking about the Mizbeach and the Menorah as we did with the previous Aliyah. So there is a lot of synergy between these two shishis, but also to now piggyback on the synergy, this gets us into Parshas HaChodesh, because the first pasuk tells us about the beginning of Nisan, right? So the Mishkan is established on the first day of Nisan, and that is very significant for the whole theme of Chodesh. So the Parshas HaChodesh that we read, just to say a few words about this, so there's a lot to discuss about a Chodesh, we'll just say a few words about it. So the notion, first of all, of the Dalet Parshias as a whole, we spoke a little bit about Parshas Parah last week, and about Parshas Zachar before that, and about how each one has perhaps a whole history behind it as to why we do it, but there is also a case to be made that the Dalet Parshios should not be looked at as individual chiyuvim, but rather as one entity, that there's one progression between the four. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, for example, had an interesting vort about this, that he said that the four Parshios together I meant to convey the message that appears in the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Al Yisalel Chacham B'Chachmaso, Al Yisalel Gibor B'Kuraso, Al Yisalel Asher B'Ashro, Ki Bezos Yisalel. Right? The pasuk says that the wise man should not take pleasure and take pride in his wisdom, nor should the Gibor in his Gvura, nor should the rich person in his wealth, but rather in the knowledge of God, that's what a person should be proud of. So Rav Aaron said that that's the message of the four Parshias together, are leading us up to understand that. That first we're told that we shouldn't take pride in our osher, in our wealth. So that's Shkolim. Shkolim tells us that we have to take from our wealth and give that to the tzibur. That's not something that's there to glorify us. And then we're told that we shouldn't take too much pleasure in our gvura and our strength. Look, we could be attacked and we could be assaulted by a malik, and it's only because God is there to protect us that we are saved. And we shouldn't be too oppressed by our chachma. Look, there are things that are beyond us. Parshas Parah is a mystery. We're not able to... Sorry? Yeah, no, the pasuk doesn't follow the word of the parsha. I just switched it to the order of the... Because I think the message is how we're... So I'm just saying in the order of how the parshas actually fall out. But you're not supposed to notice that, though. But yeah, I was keeping the order of how the parshas fall out. So, but the end is important. That's the crucial part of the order. That all of this is there to make the message that don't be too happy about any of those things. Don't take pride in those things. But rather, the source of our pride is our relationship with the Ribono Shel. And therefore, Parshas HaChodesh, which is about the covenant with God, the bris and the mitzvos, and that's what solidifies our relationship. That's really the source of our pride and of our chachma, and that's where we should take notice. So that's one expression of how the four parshiyos make a theme. There is an entire sefer about the four parshiyos, which I have here, called the Bekiso Bekaso is the subtitle. The bigger title is more words to it. And it's written by Reuven Schwartz, who coincidentally, the sefer is called Zmani Reuven. So Zmani Reuven, ostensibly on the cover, it says it's all Seder Moed, but it's all about the Dalet Parshios. The whole sefer is about the Dalet Parshios. And this Rabbi Reuven Schwartz, parenthetically, or somewhat coincidentally, he also wrote a beautiful sefer on Lashon Hara and the Hilchos Deis of the Rambam. So there he talks a lot about issues of Ketores and things like that, so that's also a little bit of synergy. but in a sefer on the Dalet Parshios, so he advances a theme throughout the sefer that the Dalet Parshios are really one chiyuv together, and that basically they are chiyuvim of other. That the notion of Mishenichnas Adam Ma'arim B'Simcha is that a part of the expression of Simcha is that we enhance the themes of Adar with these parshiyos. And there's a number of rallies that it's really all about Adar, it's all centered around Adar, and that ideally we try not to separate the parshiyos from each other when possible. It's all basically one sentence. And then we get to Parshas HaChodesh. So there he notes that this is basically the introduction to Nisan. It's about creating the chibur of the themes between Adar and Nisan, and that's what the Dalet Parshiyos are trying to do. And that basically gets us to the doorstep of the Geula, because the Geula is supposed to involve the reinauguration of the Karbanos. Yes, Makaris for this on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So essentially, that's the message of this whole theme, and that very much connects to Shishi of Pekude, which starts off that way. Now, one of the themes in HaChodesh, we'll just mention briefly, is the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, and the notion that we should grab onto time. You've probably heard Rav Soloveitchik's famous drasha, that part of the transition from avdus to free people is that an eved has no control over time, and eved is completely meshubed to his master. This is something that we spoke about recently in a different context. We talked about Sechiras Poelim a little bit in the sugyas on Dav Zayin, and there the idea that we have an iser to be like an eved, that even if we're willing to, it seems we're not allowed to sell off our time too absolutely, because there is a din that our time must be ours, that we are not avodim la'avodim, but we are avodim to God. So the message of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Soloveitchik explained this also in the context of Mitzvah Aseh Shehazman Grama for Eved, which we see then is different than Mitzvah Aseh Shehazman Grama for Isha. So that the p'tur of an Eved from Mitzvah Aseh Shehazman Grama is because an Eved has no control over time. He has no connection to time. His time is someone else's. But the whole message of the Geula is HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, you have time. Time is now your tool to use this time and to make something out of it. So within that theme, Rav Huttner has an essay about this in the beginning of the Sefer on Pesach, that's why we also find the themes of Zrizim, Magdim, and the Mitzvah, so a little more synergy to this week, embedded in the Geula, the Yetziyah Mitzrayim, and the idea of Ushmartem Es HaMatzos, says the Gemara, Mikan Shein Machmisen Es HaMitzvos, that we don't let Mitzvos wait around and become stale, because we have this focus on time. And Rav Huttner has this essay where he asserts that the message of Zrizim, Magdim, and the Mitzvos, and especially as it's formulated in this sentence, Vei Machmisen Es HaMitzvos, is that we have to show that we're on top of time, that time doesn't control us, but that we control it. Now, clearly, we live in a physical universe, so there's only so much we can do about that, but we try to make a statement that we don't sit around and let time happen to us, but instead, we assert ourselves over time. So that is the theme also of the Zrizim, Magdim, and Mitzvos, which synergizes to our topic this week, also synergizes to the fact that the reference to Avraham Avinu is on Daf Chavtes and Kedushin on our Daf, where the Gemara talks about Zrizus Tzav Ladoros. And we had an opportunity to speak a lot about the lumdus of the Zrizim, Makdim, and the Mitzvos this week, so I won't repeat what we said then, other than to reference to its synergy, but maybe make one more reference, just compliment it a little bit. But the question that we posed about whether Zrizim, Makdim, and the Mitzvos is a hider to show that we're doing the mitzvah enthusiastically, or is it something that we incorporate so that we won't lose the mitzvah? So this could affect a more commonly found question in Zrizim. If you look through the Svarim, so the question that's often asked about Zrizim, Makdim, and the Mitzvos is, does the Zrizus become a part of the Mitzvah? Is it something that is external to the Mitzvah? You have the Mitzvah, there's also an inyan to do it with the Zrizus. Or do you say that the reason Makdima the Mitzvos comes to define the theme of the mitzvah itself. So there are a couple of tosis that are sometimes brought into the conversation to suggest that Zrizus really becomes a part of the mitzvah itself. There's a tosis in the beginning of Megillah where the Gemara talks about Mevatlin es avoda misha mikra Megillah, that we somehow are Mevatel, we negate the avoda because of mikra Megillah. And the Rishonim assume, a lot of them, it's a machlokus, but a number of the Rishonim assume that it can't mean that if you can only do one, read the Megillah or do the avoda, that you'll do the Megillah. Because Megillah is a din d'rabbanan and the avoda is a din min haTorah. So how could it mean that you would skip out the d'oraisa for d'rabbanan? Now there is a minority view in Rishonim that it does mean that, which is a fascinating discussion I'd be happy to go into in a different context. But for now, to focus on the Rishonim who assume that it doesn't mean that, so what does it mean? So Tosu says, well, because they would normally do the avoda the first thing in the morning, and now they're going to do the Megillah first and then do the avoda, so they're going to lose out some reason. So that's called mevatlin. So the point being, as some of the Achronim understand it, the Tori Evin has a comment over there, that you see that just because you do something a little bit later, just because you lose out in this reason, that makes it appropriate to use the language of mevatlin, as if you're not doing the mitzvah at all, which is a very striking usage. And with more halachic implications in our context of Bris Milah that we've been talking about this week, so there is a Tosfos in Parak Ablaze of the Milah and Shabbos, where Tosfos discusses about the question of the Bris Milah and Shabbos, what should happen if you have the baby in one place and the knife in the other place. So Tosfos discusses the question, is it less of an Avera to bring the baby to the knife or to bring the knife to the baby? And it gets into the discussion of, do you say Chai Nose Es Atzmo, do you say that carrying a person is not on a Torah level called carrying on Shabbos? So halacha, we assume that carrying a baby would be considered carrying anyway, because the exemption of Chai Nose Es Atzmo only applies to a person who can walk himself. So an 8-day-old baby who can't walk wouldn't be subject to Chai Nose Es Atzmo anyway. But Tosfos is assuming differently. And Tosfos discusses that it seems to be it's less of an Avera to carry a baby on Shabbos than it is to carry a knife, because Chai Nose Es Atzmo and the knife would be Mamash Otzah. So Tosfos asks, why don't we say that if the knife and the baby are not in the same place, let's bring the baby to the knife instead of bringing the knife to the baby? So Tosfos says, we don't do that because it's hard to carry around crying babies, and it's easier to carry around a knife, although we normally recommend not running with one. But even without running, apparently it's quicker to just bring the knife to the baby than to bring the baby to the knife. So Tosfos is apparently saying here that for the purposes of Zrizin, it's worth doing that. It's worth doing the greater compromise in Hilchos Shabbos of bringing the knife to the baby rather than the other way around, even though the mitzvah of Milah will happen one way or another. So this isn't to facilitate the mitzvah of Milah, this is to facilitate the zrizus of the Milah, and yet apparently that justifies it, apparently that's enough. So that's also quoted as a raya, that maybe the zrizus becomes a chelik of the mitzvah. So I think, you could probably say it both ways, but I think it makes a little more sense to say that if you believe that Zrizus is a chelik of the mitzvah, so it means it comes from a certain level of responsibility towards getting the mitzvah done. That the concern is that if you don't let this take first priority, if you don't make sure that you get to this at an earliest possible opportunity, so then there is the possibility that the mitzvah will get lost. While if you take the position that Zrizus is a hinder, it's something that we do to show enthusiasm, so that presumably that's more of a general external concept that we want to show enthusiasm, but it doesn't necessarily come to define the mitzvah itself. I thought that perhaps that was how it would wind up, but it's a interesting concept one way or another. The idea that we mentioned earlier this week, the whole question of how do you deal with having to choose one or the other, having to choose between Zrizus or the mitzvah in its most perfect way is a major machlokas achronim that comes up in many different contexts. So we talked about it a little bit this week in terms of Rov Am as opposed to Zrizus, and it comes up in the context of Kirish Levana when you do it, things like that. Probably the most famous sources of discussion in the Radbaz and the Buchacha Rav Zeshel Avram and Chacham Tzvi, a few others who got involved in the machlokas about the question of, let's say you're in jail or you're in the army and you're in a place where you can't really do mitzvah so effectively. And they say they'll give you a furlough. You'll have a day off. You can choose whatever day off you can take off. So when should you pick your furlough? Should you save it for Yom Kippur? Should you save it for the most impactful day? Or should you say that, no, you'll focus first on what you call Zrizin, what you want to call Mitzvah Vol Yadel, Tachmin Sena, and you'll take the first opportunity to do Mitzvah. This was a major Machlokas Achronim, comes up in a lot of different contexts, but it seems to reflect the same question: what do we prioritize more? Doing things the best possible way or doing things the soonest way? And there is a certain logic to saying, well, why wouldn't you try to do everything the best way, and then when you have everything in place, they get to it quickly. So the idea that even when that's at stake, you would still prioritize getting to things quickly seems to reflect this idea that we're concerned about the mitzvah getting away. But I think also al pi derech ha-musar, and perhaps the whole message here as well, is that there's always going to be the concern in life that there's a better time to do things. And that attitude can really lead us to accomplishing nothing. You say, okay, I've been meaning to write you a letter for a while, but I want to write you a perfect one, so I never get around to it, so you don't hear from me at all. We all probably find that familiar. So perhaps the message is that sometimes, yes, we ideally want to do things in the best possible way, but we also have to recognize that that type of waiting can sometimes become a Yetzirah, can sometimes be an excuse. So I once in one of the Svarim, one of the Balei Musar, quotes an idea that, without going to the whole story now, very quickly, that somebody gave tzedakah to somebody who came to his door. He gave some money that had been set aside, a large amount that was set aside for tzedakah. And when his wife came home, she yelled at him because she said, we've been saving that money for some great tzedakah need, and this person who came to your door was not necessarily the most compelling case, and why did you give our whole tzedakah stash to this person? It wasn't the best use. And he said to her, you know, I was thinking that, and I realized that that's the Yetzirah thinking, that that's my saying, okay, there'll be a better use for this some other day, so let me hold off. And sometimes that mentality means you never end up accomplishing anything. So to conquer that Yetzirah, so okay, I'm going to give it to this tzedakah, it's the first situation that has presented itself, without allowing the thinking that, oh, there'll be a better use of it, let me hold off, to interfere and possibly resulting in my never getting to do it. So we have to be very aware of when that Yetzirah is there, that yes, it's appropriate to try to do everything in the best possible way, but it's also possible for that to be Yetzirah. It's possible for that to be something which is interfering with us ever accomplishing anything, and to be aware of when that's lurking and when that's affecting us is perhaps one of the major messages that comes from some of these dinim, and that comes also from the message of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. So with that, we will bezrizus to the mitzvah of Mincha. So who wants to daven for us? Who do you daven for us?